You're listening to On the Couch with Dr. Michelle, right here on LA Talk Radio.
Hey, everybody, and welcome to my couch, as you always are here Wednesdays, wherever you're at around the world listening. I appreciate your comments and questions all the time. If you have those for my guests, anytime, bring them, and we'll try to ask those questions while we're live on the air. Of course, you can check out all the archives as well at latalkradio.com under On the Couch, and you can just see the archives listed. So, it's so nice to have you all here. Today, we are talking about a really interesting subject. I think it's interesting, and I think most of you think so as well, because it's one of the most common issues that I hear from people and couples who I see in my practice. Basically, they want to know how to better cope with their partner, and particularly men, okay, when they get impatient, a little distant, or possibly lash out to them during stressful arguments or moments. We all do that, right? It's human beings. You know, homo sapien, yeah, homo sapien. But let me clarify this first of all, because I already had some responses on my email and also messages on the Facebook where I posted about today's show. I am not picking on or talking trash about men. We're not doing that today, me and my special guest. We will clarify that. What we are talking about is helping guys understand themselves better, healthier ways to cope when things get tough and, you know, really stressful with their relationships, whether they're, you know, personal, romantic, workplace, family. We all have them. We're also going to be helping women who may have some difficult relationships as well. These are great tools coming up for you today. And if you want to hear a better understanding of why communication and different perspectives happen, stay tuned. I have a special guest. I've had him on so many times before, and it's just a pleasure to have him on again. He is the renowned Dr. Lynn Felder, and let's bring him on the air right now. Hey, Lynn.
Nice to talk with you.
Nice to talk with you. Oh, did I do okay on that intro? I didn't step on anybody's toes.
It was fine. There was a lot of eye stuff about, you know, And there's a certain respect that you're showing already, which is, this is all delicate stuff, and we've got to treat each other well. We can't scold or you know, yell at each other about this stuff. We all wrestle with this stuff.
We sure do, you know, and therapists need therapists too. But anyway, I always try to have you on my podcast as soon as one of your books comes out. And today we're going to be talking about your latest. What a great title. I mean, thank you. It's such a good book. And it is called When a Good Man Cares Enough to Change Something Crucial. Creative New Breakthrough Methods for Handling the Stressful Moments at Home, at Work, and in Your Relationship. So, you know, I got to tell you, I raced through the book. I read it in one night because it's so comfortable to read. And the cool thing about your books is that they are all helpful. They help, exactly like you just shared with me, people understand why they do the things they do without criticizing, without humiliating, you know. And they're just terrific. And this is one of the best and your latest. So everybody check it out. And if you would like to comment or if you have any questions, do so. You can do it on the email right here. It's straighttalkdoc@gmail.com. How's that? Let me first do a little quick bio about you, because the thing is, and I've said this before, we could go on, you know, for 30 minutes about all the stuff you've done. So, let's just jump into this.
The quick bio is skinny, bald guy grew up in Detroit. Keep going. What else?
Better than a fat guy growing up. And with bald is cool. Bald is what's happening now. So that's, you're right in there. Good. Dr. Lynn Felder has written 18 books now that have sold over 1 million copies way over, to help individuals and families resolve their personal conflicts and their spiritual, religious, and political differences. And Len, by the way, received the Distinguished Merit Citation of the National Conference of Christians and Jews for helping to create workshops for teens and adults on how to deal with racism, sexism, homophobia, and religious prejudice. He's appeared on over 200 radio and TV programs. You're all over the network, Len. I love it. Including the Today Show on NBC, Oprah Winfrey, CNN, National Public Radio, Canada AM, the BBC, and many more in London. So you moved to Los Angeles, and of course, for many years, you've been here practicing and helping thousands of individuals, couples, families, and organizations to just live healthier, happier lives. So thank you for all that. So thanks. Nice to have you.
Thanks.
Super stuff. So shall we just jump right into your book here?
Sure.
Let's just do it. So I read the title already, but just briefly, when a good man cares enough to change something crucial. All right. And we are going to find the creative new breakthrough methods to handle all these stressful things. So who was your book specifically written for? I just sort of said it in the title, but we'll get a little deeper here.
No, it's complicated because I wanted to write a book for women who could read this book and then give it to a man, whether it's a boyfriend or a husband or a father or a son or a brother, a coworker, or even a boss. And the guy wouldn't get offended or pissed off.
Yes, yes.
Handing him a book because the book says you're a good man. And then sometimes during stressful moments, all of us human beings lose it. We lose it. We lose our stuff. And so how to bring mindfulness and tools for mindfulness during those really intense moments when you're cooked, when you're overloaded day and you come home and something happens and, you know, the dog, the kid, the partner, whatever happens. What do we do in those moments? You know, not under ideal moments, but in the moments that we all live with. I have a kid with the special needs.
And oh, you do. What an angel.
A moment in our house.
Yes.
Our house is always interesting. And when, when I take my daughter out in public, stuff happens every day. And I have to keep it together. And she's really good. My daughter's really good. They say that people with autism don't have nonverbal skills, but she's got them.
So yes.
She'll say to me, she'll say, Dad, you have that therapist Germanic tone in your voice today.
I love it.
That's my blind spot. I don't even know that I'm starting to sound like my father, you know?
Right.
So she busts me.
Oh my goodness.
And I could fight with her, I could tell her, but it's not. It's my blind spot. Mm. And I need a partner and I need a daughter who can, you know, my wife has complete permission to tell me when I'm getting angry.
Sure.
So
I love that.
Both for women to be able to gently and lovingly help a guy when he gets overloaded and stressed.
Yes.
And also to help men hear lots of tools, lots of practical stuff without being scolded, without being shamed, without being told that they're a jerk or a horrible person. Because all of us men have this upbringing that causes us to sometimes, you know, get a little bit too bossy and too impatient and scrolling our phones, stuff like that.
Sure. No. Well said. And no, it's true. And I find this a lot in my practice. And, you know, as you said, I really cannot add much to that, except men have been brought up to be more stoic and don't show your emotions and be a man and, you know, all that stuff. And that's in our older generations. That's what they're sort of saying to us. And so we hold it in. And then we come to the therapist because we've held it and subdued it for so many years. But so, I hear you.
And also for younger men, too, that younger men, you know, they're much more open than older men were. But on the other hand, there's a language of emotions. There's a language of relationship. There's a language of cleaning up messes in a relationship. Oh. But sometimes they feel like someone's speaking a different language than the one I speak. Can we find a language that we both speak?
Yes.
That's what I also try to do in this book. Find words and find playful, connecting, teamwork ways of dealing with stuff instead of she has the right method and he's an idiot. I don't.
Yeah, no.
It works for most men.
That's right.
I once had a therapist tell me that. So she says to her boyfriend or her husband, he says, honey, we need to talk. She says, you think that's a good thing to say to a man? I said, well, there's a 95% chance he thinks that means I'm in trouble.
That's right.
I better freeze up and I better start getting defensive. So my, let's find a different phrase. You know,
yes. That he, yes.
It's a beautiful phrase, honey.
It is.
You talk, but it doesn't work with 95% of men. So let's find a better phrase.
And what would that be? Perhaps.
Better phrase. Hey, you remember you and I were getting kind of testy with each other a couple minutes ago? Let's brainstorm together, figure out what we can do differently next time so that we don't get busy with each other.
Ooh, that works. I like it.
That's teammates.
That's very non-threatening.
You might be good team players.
Yes. Yes. I love that. Well said. And we've got more. And there's more to come. More great advice because it's in your book. And we're going to talk about that. You know, you sort of begin with sharing how men sometimes don't recognize. In other words, just what you said, honey, we need to talk. You know, the flag goes up. I'm in trouble. They don't recognize that they're being a certain way or that they're coming off a little harsh or that they're coming off stressful or the tone. Or I mean, again, we're all human and we all blow up. We all have. But what are some of the ways that men can sort of, let's go with men for now, can sort of identify that they are not being the best that they can be?
Well, there's clues you can get from other people and there's clues you can get from within your own self. So clues from other people is if you notice that the people you live with or the people you work with are starting to like pull away from you or starting to get really frustrated that you're cutting them off or that you're impatient or that you're bossy with them or that you're always you know, trying to prove things and they get kind of sick of it.
You
can fight about that. Or you can say, you know what? I don't think I want to lose this person. I don't think I want an expensive divorce or no sex for the next 20 years because of my tone of voice.
This
there's something about my tone of voice that's a turnoff.
Yes.
And I could defend my tone of voice. I could say justified.
Yeah.
Or I could say, what other tone of voice options do I have? Because if I've got a better tone of voice, it's not going to cause people at work or at home to pull away from me. That's in my interest. All of the stuff in the book is what's in a man's interest to have fewer fights and fewer people pulling away from you. So noticing that people are pulling away. The other thing is to notice sometimes we know when we're on high rev. We know when we're feeling really impatient and itchy and we just want to interrupt. We want to finish people's sentences and we want to tell them the way it is. And that is such a turnoff for people. To have constantly interrupting or being impatient or saying, I'm too busy on my phone to deal with what you just fell apart with today. You know, those things, when you notice that you're on high rev and what are your tools?
Yeah.
Like one of the tools in the book is before you walk in the door to be with your partner or your kids or even somebody in an important meeting at work, to take a breath and to say, the next couple minutes, I get to choose whether I'm going to absolutely turn somebody off and cause them to not want to be around.
Right.
Or whether I'm going to be the best listener I've ever been, even though I've heard it 20 times.
Right.
You know, I often say to men, if you say to someone, hey, you've already told me that, that means that you're going to have a 20-week or a 2-month fight with this person.
That's right.
So telling them, hey, you already told me that. They want to tell you what's important in their life. And yes, it is going to be repetitive. So if you don't do the, oh, you already told me that, cut to the chase.
The
other thing, which is to listen and to say, hey, you know, that's really something that just happened to you. What would you like as support?
Wow.
Just those two sentences. Wow. You are now a good guy. There's not going to be a fight. You're not going to have to go to 20 marriage counseling sessions over that fight that you're not having now. And now you're like, you're a teammate. You're a teammate during a tough moment for your partner.
Yes. Well said, Lynn. Because, I mean, again, what I hear commonly in the couples room is that, you know, it's like, same thing. You've told me that. You've said this ad nauseum. You always, it's like, whoa, okay. There's a reason why this person keeps telling you that. you're not listening. And that, to your point, just listen and say, whoa, okay. Yeah, I kind of understand. And because, you know, you said that several times, I know we need to just come together on this. So beautifully said.
Or even that they have a favorite story or a favorite trauma that they want to tell you about many, many times.
Yes.
And you are the beloved person who gets that inside story.
Or
and
not.
You have to be careful. Like if they tell you stuff about their mom or dad and how close they are at their mom and dad, you also have to know the ground rules of the relationship.
Right.
They can talk trash about their mom and dad. I don't know if you can talk trash about their mom and dad. And you have to set up the ground rules. You have to say,
right.
By the way, when you are talking trash about your mom and dad, do you want me to agree gently? Do you want me to talk about times when they've done the same thing to me? Or do you want me to just shut up and listen? You know, and usually your partner's like, boy, shut up and listen is the right answer.
That's right. No, that's a really common thing. That's a bone of contention for so many people. It's like,
my dad's a complete jerk. And you say, yeah, your dad is a complete jerk. She goes, what do you mean my dad's a complete jerk? She said, well, you just said it. And so,
Exactly. Right, exactly. It's very hard to not, you know, have the tendency to do that. I remember when, bless her soul, my mom would come over and she was great. I mean, I'm blessed. I was really blessed. But my husband would say, God, what a control freak. And just those words would just, you know, and his mother was the same way. So that's why he recognized it in her. Because,
that's funny.
But exactly. No, I know exactly. So good tips on how we can transform and change our thinking. And it's, you know, you have to practice these things, right? And we'll talk about more techniques and ideas that you could share, but it's not an overnight flip the switch and, hey, I'm going to be this wonderful person and be very, you know, get in touch with my right brain a little more and listen and care and that kind of thing. So it takes practice, right?
Right. Yeah. And you mess up sometimes. One of the great things, I mentioned this in the book, this is something my wife invented and I just loved it. When I was using the wrong tone and I was, you know, coming off a little bit too controlling and too know it all, you know, she hates that.
Yes.
So she said to me one time, could you try that again? I'll give you a free do-over, but could you leave out the condescending tone of voice?
Ooh.
And I went, God, that is so generous. It's
wow.
Like,
oh, I love it.
About it. We couldn't fight about it. I could have defended. Oh, what do you mean condescending tone of voice? But there was there. So she gave me the free do-over. And then I got to say, here's the thing that's important to me that I want to communicate to you. I want to communicate it without the condescending or the I know and you don't know tone.
Oh, that's lovely.
And so a free do-over, it's playful. It's like two five-year-olds playing, you know, hopscotch with each other. So if you and your partner can be playful and turn it into fun games with free do-overs,
then
it's not a power struggle. It's not a war as to who's right.
Right. Yes. I think that's beautiful. I mean, I would, of course, as probably every couple, I would complain about my husband's tone. You know, sometimes he go, oh, really? Really? And then so he would ask me the same question or answer me in the robot voice that had flat affect. So he'd go, well, I just wanted to ask you why you are being so. So there was no tone whatsoever. He was a robot. And that made me laugh. So I was loosened up a little bit. I wasn't defensive, but he got it. I don't know how to say this, you know, without my tone, but I'll be a robot. So.
Right.
I don't know if that's a good tip. But.
No, it's hard because a lot of times men are learned that, you know, we either have a tough tone or we have sort of a super neutral tone that it lacks any warmth.
Yes.
So one of the techniques that's in the book, and this is something that men can read this in the book. I don't know that you want to teach this to a man.
No.
With a client, and he was saying his wife and his kids are sometimes pulling away from him because he's kind of bossy and impatient when he's under stress or when he's burned out from the day.
Yeah.
And he says, you know, is there something we can do? I said, I don't know. Let's brainstorm. Let's figure out something we can come up with that'll work during those tense moments. So I said, what if you said to yourself, what would a dick do? And he said, what did you just say? He said, what did you just say? You're supposed to be a therapist. I said, no, I'm brainstorming with you.
I'm just being honest here.
In 10 seconds with your, you know, with silence just between you and you, what would a dick do? He goes, I know exactly what a dick would do. A dick would be scrolling on his phone saying, I'm too impatient. I'm too important for this conversation. And I don't deal with emotions. So get off it. And be, you know, so he knows what a dick would do. He knew it in 10 seconds. he knew it himself. I didn't have to teach him anything. So then I said, okay, now after the 10 seconds of what would a dick do, what would a nurturing, mindful person do? Or what would a compassionate, mindful person do? He knew the answer to that question too. I didn't have to teach him a new language or new skills.
Yes.
He said a mindful, nurturing person would put down the phone
and
really be present for his partner or for his kid. And then they wouldn't be mad at him all the time.
Right.
I said, bingo. I said, in less than a minute, you just completely taught yourself new behaviors and you've got this tool, this mindfulness tool. You can use it whenever you want.
Yes, that's great.
You get to be cuffed because you can't say to people on the street, oh, by the way, you know, ask yourself, what would a dick do? Because they'll think you're crazy. But men have a sense of humor and a sense of playfulness around that. And we all know.
Yeah, sure.
And if you don't know, you know, watch TV sometimes during a press conference, you'll see people embodying that behavior. What would a dick do? You know, and you say, oh, that's how people cut each other off.
Oh, that's right. Oh, that's right. Exactly. Oh, my goodness. Well said. Also, the thing about what is this? Dr. Felder, what is this thing about men wanting to always fix it? Let's fix it. Let's just take care. How can you handle this issue that you're having with you? I'll fix it for you. Here's what you do.
Well, it's confusing. On the one hand, we're the ones who are supposed to change the light bulbs and make, you know, learn all sorts of skills around the house and deal with this and deal with that. So that's a good thing. But on the other hand, when we jump in prematurely without being asked, especially on something that the person could do themselves or could do in partnership or collaboration with us, and then we jump in and say, hey, let me do that. I can do that faster than you and you're doing it all wrong. I can do that faster than you and you're doing it all wrong might be factually correct.
Yeah.
But you just lost your partner for days, weeks, or hours, you know?
Right.
So that one doesn't work. And people who are smart or people who are insecure and they try to, you know, always be fixing it and being the smartest person in the room, it's a turnoff.
Yep. So
the question is, sometimes you have to actually ask the person, do you want me to fix what's going on the computer right now? Or do you want to do it together? Mm. Do you want me to be sitting at the chair in front of the computer? Or do you want me to just coach you while you're doing it? And what should we do if you can't do it and if you need me to come in as a relief pitcher?
Yeah.
Then, now you're setting up collaboration. You're figuring out the logistics of how to do it so it doesn't turn into a power struggle or a fight.
Yes. Yeah. No.
I mean, my wife hates that when I take over anything because she wants to do it herself. On the other hand, she doesn't want me to withdraw and to not participate.
Sure.
She wants to help. She just doesn't want the condescension or the dominance part.
Well, that makes a lot of sense, too, and that's lovely. Yeah. By the way, in case you just joined us, I'm talking to the renowned Leonard Felder, Dr. Leonard Felder, psychologist, best-selling author and speaker, and just Google him. He's all over the place, and you can see so many great interviews about all of his 18 books that he's written, best-selling as well, many of them. The one we're talking about today is called When a Good Man Cares Enough to Change Something Crucial, Creative New Breakthrough Methods for Handling the Stressful Moments at Home, Work, and in Your Relationship. And it's a terrific book. Men, pick it up. Women, pick it up to understand your men and also help out with the communication as well. I mean, we're guilty of nagging. You know, no excuses. We women are guilty of repeating ourselves. We're guilty of, and I hate to be general, but I am being general, but I'm copping to it. I do these things myself. And so I'm just saying, hey, you got to give your man some slack, but also these are creative ways in Lynn's book on how to better communicate.
And how to be teammates with each other instead of going to war over all sorts of little stuff.
Yes, you've got that right. Teammates, that's a good word, you know, and there's speaking about which I really, oh man, the one that I really got into in your book, well, there's many, but it's the one-upmanship reflex. Oh God, can you talk about that? Because we all do it. So.
Yeah, so people do it. Sometimes they want to prove their worthiness. And we prove our worthiness sometimes by clumsily cutting someone off or you know, telling them the way it has to be or giving them too much information. At my daughter's special needs school, they would teach all these kids, especially kids on the autism spectrum, the TMI, the too much information. And all of us are guilty of that all the time.
Sure.
There's stuff that we know and we've looked up on Wikipedia or, you know, you're about to go to a movie and you start telling people too much about the movie. And so it's interesting information, but people start to go, God, this person's sucking all the air out of the room. You know, there's no room for the rest of us.
Yes. Yes.
So if you have a one-upsmanship reflex, it might be, you know, something that comes because you were insecure earlier on. Maybe you were picked on as not being smart enough, or maybe you were picked on as something else. And so you've tried to prove in this one area that you've got expertise and you want to impose your expertise on anybody who will listen long enough. And that's painful because you lose friends and you lose loved ones over that. The second thing is, you know, what you talked about before about coming in to fix things that don't need to be over. They need you to collaborate with. They need
to stage with.
And another one that happens is just there's a tone of voice. There's a tone of voice that says, I know and you don't. And the I know and you don't is so, so painful to be on the receiving end of that. And maybe you were on the receiving end of that from your mom or your dad or some teacher or some bully.
Exactly.
And now you're doing it. Now you're doing it to somebody else.
Yes. Wow. That is so
it's like people are picking on each other about their physical stuff, about their weight or about this or what the clothes they wear. And you didn't like it when people picked on you. And then you notice you're doing it to somebody else. Oh, my gosh. So when you can catch yourself or when someone points it out to you and says, you know, are you aware that you're talking down to me? Are you aware that you're cutting me off? Are you aware that you're finishing my sentences?
Right.
Are you aware that, like, you go on and on about the thing? So if someone points it out to you, rather than fighting with them, you can say, okay, this is something I can probably make some improvements about. Because you don't want to turn people off at work or at home.
Right. No, you don't. And I love also in your book how you talk about how wonderful it is to be able to apologize. Why are we so afraid to apologize? Because we'll feel like we're bad, or we'll be admitting that we're bad, or what? Why are so many of
us? Good reasons. The two good reasons. You know, you don't want to be a bad person, but also sometimes you're fighting for the facts, which is I'm not the sole cause of what happened.
Right.
And I don't want to take the whole burden of responsibility for what happened. And so I'm going to resist. I'm not going to apologize until the other person apologizes first. And there's an old expression, you should live so long. You should they're going to apologize first. Good luck.
Okay. Right.
But so what I talk about, it's a chapter and I start off with what are the half-assed apologies? The first half-assed apologies that's very common is where you say to the person, I'm sorry you felt that way. Okay.
Yeah.
Now, if you translate that into English, I'm sorry you felt that way means you're a fool.
Yep.
You're wrong. You're oversensitive. You misread the situation. But since you're so delusional that you felt that way, you tend to apologize and say, I'm sorry you felt that way.
Yes.
Then you shouldn't have felt that way. You're goofy. Okay.
Right.
So that is a half-assed non-apology. Okay.
Yes.
Another one is where you go into a debate or a trial over who started it and who did more, who's more responsible.
Yes.
That's exhausting. That's like Middle East warfare. It's going to go on. You know, so who started it is like the most exhausting fight in the world to have.
Oh, it Rather really is.
Half-assed apologies. Yeah. An authentic apology is where you own up to your part of the thing.
Right.
And with my wife, she will apologize, but never first. She will apologize if I own up to what she refers to as 50%.
Mm-hmm.
But sometimes I'm not 50%. Sometimes I'm only 2% of what happens.
Sure, sure. Okay?
So I talk, especially with male clients who don't want to say something that's not factual. I didn't start it. I didn't this. I didn't, you know, I can say, well, is there anything that you did that maybe it's 10% or 20% of what
right.
Right. And if you make some improvement on that one thing, there's going to be fewer of those fights. There's going to be fewer of those disagreements and moments. He goes, I did 10%. I had a crappy tone of voice, or I cut her off, or I called her this. You know, so he'll own up to his 10%, but don't ask him to call it 50%. Okay.
So, right.
And then when he owns up to his 10%, and don't say it's 10%, just say,
right,
I'm aware that I did this thing that added to the problem.
Right.
And then
right.
She said, oh, wow, I've got a teammate or somebody I can collaborate yeah. with. He's not the evil ogre right now.
That's
and so
right.
She'll sometimes own up to what she did as well. And now you can start to brainstorm with each other. And even if the other person doesn't own up to their half, you can still brainstorm and say, if in the future, you know, I change that little bit of how I contributed to it.
Right.
You know, what can we do so we don't keep doing yes. the same fight? My wife and I have a basic fight we've had. We've been together for 46 years.
Mazel tov.
I'm a chronically early person. She's a chronically late person. But she has taught me over the years that chronically early people are self-righteous and think they're better, but they're not. Chronically early people, like yours truly, they think they're better. They sometimes breathe down people's necks a lot. They show up for dinner parties before the host is ready. They do all sorts of things that are irritating, but they don't know it because they think they're better because they're early. So the late people get picked on a lot.
Yes.
So we've learned that we call that fight number one. It's a powerful word. We just call it, you know, and we'll ask each other, we say, are we having fight number one again? And one of us will go, yeah, we're having fight number one. So we came up with a solution many years ago to fight number one, which is
right.
we can drive separately to things.
Ooh, I like that.
On her neck. She's not going to have to feel like I'm a controlling ogre. I get right. to go on time. I don't have to have the embarrassment that I apparently can't
sure. handle
coming in late. Sure. And so, and then she comes whenever she comes, and I don't have to explain or justify it. It's on her. And so that solved most of the fight number one. Occasionally, we still have it when it's a time we can't drive together.
Sure.
But we at least have a playfulness and a humor yeah. about it.
Yes. That, you know, yes.
So we can apologize for being late, or we can apologize yes. for controlling and early or whatever.
Right.
But coming up with, well, what are we going to do differently next time so that we're not at each other's throats? That's the key to an apology. The apology is not just owning up to it.
Yes.
Next time we're in the same tense, stressful situation, what are we going to do differently? So that yes. we get to stay as allies instead of adversaries.
Yes. Oh, beautifully said. Beautifully said. I love that. Couldn't. I wish we could all do that. I'm guilty of not doing that. But
it's hard.
Oh, let's.
Because the blood is the blood's you know the adrenaline's pumping and the thoughts are you know and I have to manually get my brain to not go to that case building. I'm right. She's wrong. Place. I have to breathe and do that same exercise, which is, what would an obnoxious, controlling person do here? Don't
right.
do that. What would a mindful, nurturing person do? Oh, I know. I would listen to what's causing her to be late and be supportive yes. and then still show up on time, driving right. safely, so that we both can get what we need in the situation.
Oh, that's really perfect. I love that. We've got a couple of emails here, and one of them that just jumps out fits perfectly into what I wanted to talk about next. So it said, hi, Lynn, love the show. Can you give us good tips on how we can deal with our sexual drive differences? Good one.
Sexual oh. drive differences between two Ooh. People who love each other?
Ooh.
That's never happened. So. So you know, to make it a playful conversation rather than a power struggle, especially if you can have the conversation when you're not in a tense moment or having a failure moment or whatever, but like take a walk together in nature or have a nice relaxing meal together on a good day and say, you know what, we've got to figure out some creative ways to deal with our different rhythms and different, you know, and then be playful with each other.
Right.
Sometimes when we just want to pleasure each other and nothing's going to be goal oriented,
yes.
we're
yes.
just going to, we're going to practice being 15-year-old and kissing, but
yeah.
we're not allowed to
well,
do
I like
more.
That.
We're
right.
Not, it's so hot when you're 15 years old and you're
yeah.
not allowed to do more. Maybe
right.
I grew up in Detroit, so maybe it was 15, but if you're in New York or Los Angeles, maybe it's 9.
oh God forbid, but it's true.
Yeah,
okay.
But it's so true because people start so early. So anyway, So what would it be like if we decided tonight
yeah.
we're going to play kissy face?
Yeah.
And we might even teach each other what kind of kissing we really like. Sometimes yeah. one person has been the choreographer of kissing for so long.
Isn't
we're doing
that
kissing their style. And uh-huh. wouldn't it be cool if both people get to take turns being the choreographer Some people like fast, some people like slow, some people like this, some people like that.
Right.
So slowing it down and having, or and also having a night where we say we're not going to do anything that goes to the private parts. We're just going to tickle each other's arms. We're just going to massage each other's backs. We're just going to give
great
each other
idea. Clothes.
We're going to watch our favorite show together, and we're going to cuddle. When you create intimacy, and it's not the goal-oriented keeping score intimacy,
right?
Sometimes it builds a fire, and then more stuff happens. Sometimes it doesn't. But to be honest with each other and to really say, this is what I think I've been lying to myself and to you, saying I'm enjoying this, when in fact, I'm not there. I'm facing it.
So
that's so important that the intimacy becomes we really be real with each other. We can admit when we've started to like be a little bit dishonest with each other. And now in our honesty, we're inventing a new thing. There was once a therapist named Carl Rogers a long time ago. And he
right?
Yeah. So Carl Rogers had this great thing that was so helpful to me. He said his intimacy with his wife didn't start until his plumbing stopped working.
Wow, that's heavy. I love that.
When his plumbing was working early in their relationship,
right.
They had their routine. They went through their routine. They were start, middle, end, done, smooth. We know the dance. Okay.
Yep.
But then when his plumbing started to be unpredictable, and whoever in the relationship is the unpredictable one, you know, maybe she thinks she's ready to be warm and cuddly, but then something comes up or she's overwhelmed by thoughts about this, that, or the other thing, and she needs to slow down or stop.
Sure.
All of us can be unpredictable, but it's so intimate to then be able to share that with a partner and then figure out, well, what do we want? Do we just want to cuddle? Do we want to warm each other slowly? Do we want to do this? Do we want to do that? Now you've really got a partner. You've got an intimate partner instead of somebody that you're faking the choreography steps that someone has taught you.
Right.
And that's intimate. It's intimate because there's one person on the planet that no matter what happens on a given evening, we're not going to hate each other.
That's
we're going to come up with something that feels really delicious.
Right.
Even though it's not what we thought 20 minutes ago was going to happen.
Yes. Beautifully said. Beautifully said.
So that's what the chapter covers.
Yes.
That playful brainstorming instead of that expectation thing.
Yes. Yes. It's so true. You just joined us, folks. I'm talking to the renowned Dr. Leonard Felder. He is an amazing speaker. He's all over the internet. He's written 18 books, best-selling, many of them. We're talking about his latest today. It's called When a Good Man Cares Enough to Change Something Crucial. No, we're not putting down men. We're not giving you a hard time. It's just a really caring, thoughtful book to help men and their women as well, you know, handle those stressful times. And
there's one more thing I forgot to mention about the rhythms or different sexual desires.
Yes.
So if one person, whether it's male or female, whoever's got the stronger sexual desire and they're going to be feeling really edgy if they don't get off tonight.
Right.
So as brainstorming teammates, you get to figure out what can we do so that the person that doesn't want to go all the way tonight can be also be supportive of the person who needs some sort of a release. Okay.
Right.
And there's 50,000 ways to get a release. So what's the release? Do we want to do the release in the same room, in the same bed? Do we want to help each other with the release?
Yeah.
How do we do that so that it's not a big fight?
Exactly.
I want my partner to feel pleasure. I want my partner to feel like they're not carrying around all this tension. And let's do it in a way that's loving and connecting with each other, even if we have different rhythms tonight.
Beautifully said. And as you say in your book, quote, or you can always bring out the trusty vibrator. I love that word, trusty. I think
you know, when people take it personally that the vibrator works so well, what's wrong with that? It's like, that's why we have gas stoves and electric ovens. It's, you know, we're not going to always, you know, try to put two pieces of wood together to start a fire, to build a campfire. Sometimes we use devices. Okay.
That's right. And, you know, guys, just think of it that way, or, well, whatever, but think of it that, you know, it's taking the load off you, you know, it's taking that responsibility and you're not up for it. No pun intended.
And it's kind of wonderful that the two of you both know what brings you joy and you're able to share with each other that we both love having joy and we love the other person having joy.
That's,
you know, within the boundaries that you guys create as a couple. But a vibrator, a vibrator is not going to steal your partner. A vibrator is just
going to
be, you know, an a supplement to whatever else is going on.
Whatever. And, you know, all of the wonderful happy chemicals that are released from an orgasm have been proven and written about in many scientific journals. So it does relieve stress. It's nice to have the intimacy, though, the closeness and all that. But the thing is, too, and I wanted to just ask a little bit more about this. I think, and you please tell me if I'm wrong, I think so many men are so obsessed with having to perform or the size of their penis or have, they think women are so preoccupied with that. But I mean, I have been with so many couples and women individually who say it's not as important as they think. What would you say about that?
Well, you're a woman. You get to talk first on this one. What do you think?
I think that men do stress.
Size matters, or do you think something else is the thing that makes for joy and connection?
No, I think I don't think the first thing women think. I don't think, I could be wrong. I'm going to start getting emails. But honestly, I don't think women are gauging unless they just want to have a sexual relationship with someone and they want to feel whatever. I think with a partner, it's like they don't care about size. A lot of times it doesn't matter. It's about the intimacy. It's about the emotional connection. And I think that's what we women, of course, we want to get aroused. We want to feel the joy with our partners, but we want them to enjoy it as well. And we want them to feel good. But so I observe in my sessions and also personally, so many men get so depressed because they didn't perform or they just couldn't or what?
Which is a killer. I mean, one of the ways to kill is to have performance anxiety. So that's interesting information. So the second thing is, if you know that there's like 20 different ways that the two of you can create pleasure for each other, and if one of those 20 ways is not cooperating tonight, or for some reason something else happened, you know, whether it's alcohol or tiredness or something happened, you know, and people who have diabetes, there's a lot of things that can change blood flow to this.
Oh my goodness, yes.
It's amazing that it works when it works. So when it doesn't do what you want it to do, and you put your foot down, you insist, you say, you must do it this way because that's what they have in porn films, and therefore we have to duplicate that.
Oh my gosh. Yeah, right.
So what you do is you say, okay, so that, you know, that door is closed. That door is not going so well tonight. Let's go through a different door. Let's go through a fun door. Let's go through door number three. And in door number three, there's this beautiful way of pleasuring each other where the two of you are creating a choreography that maybe you've never done before, because before the plumbing always worked.
Yes.
So that's intimacy. That's creativity. That's partnership. That's going to keep the two of you together. If you're like carrying this deep, dark secret, you know, that it's all wrong. Now, there's complicated issues. Many, many women think, if his plumbing's not working, it's because I've gained 5 pounds. No, it has nothing to do with that. Or he doesn't love me, or he doesn't. It doesn't mean that. It means that there's something going on with blood flow.
Right.
And blood flow could be affected by 10,000 things. Just like for women, there's things that cause their blood flow or their chemistry to not be going tonight, even though 2 hours ago she thought it would be.
Right.
It changes. I love the idea that people can change direction in the middle of a sexual encounter.
Right.
And if you've got a loving partner, the two of you say, okay, we just took a turn. Just took a turn. Now, instead of how could you do that? And go crazy. Instead of that, you say, okay, we just took a turn. Let's go find out what we can do on this thing so that both of us come out of this experience feeling close to each other, not feeling edgy or horrible. What can we do? So this turns into a win. You turn something that's a detour, an unexpected detour, into a win. You guys are heroes.
Oh, you got that right. That's beautifully said. Thank you for that. So hopefully, viewer who emailed me, you got a lot of your questions answered right there. And also, you know, that's why the pharmaceutical company is the wealthiest in the world, because of that little blue pill. But you can't really be taking that all the time, number one. And some folks with heart issues can't take it. So it's, you don't have to do that. It's like you said, Lynn, it's just find other creative ways. And the book has those creative ways. So thank you.
There's no name calling. I'm not going to call somebody a horrible person for having a desire that they want to fulfill, but there's going to be flexibility and playfulness in the way, you know, you take these detours with your partner. And, and it's not war. It's not power struggles. It's fun detours with somebody that you're safe going on detours with.
Yes. No, perfectly said. I love it. And I want to cover so much. I want to do another hour with you. We have about 5 minutes left, but folks, if you want to get more information about other common issues that you and your partner share, such as dealing with tasks like the home and the kitchen and childcare, and you know, this is a huge, and I know you experience this with couples and individuals, Lynn, huge issue with partners who are living together. They're not taking care of their health. That's another one. I'm sorry, guys, but a lot of you just sort of shine it on and don't follow through with a lot of doctor's visits. So we nag, we as women, you know. So that's another issue that's addressed in there. Stop me if you want to jump in here on any of this. But
no, it's important. The chapter on how men are taught, you know, not to ask for help and not to admit when they're, you know, they're supposed to say they're fine all the time. Right. You know, and so I talk about Bob Marley.
Yes.
He died young because he didn't want to look at the thing that was going on his toe that turned out to be cancer.
Yes.
About Jim Henson, who had, you know, bronchitis turned to pneumonia, and he was negotiating a deal to sell his company to Disney, so he didn't want to deal with it. So he died.
And
Heath Ledger, you know, there's all these beautiful role models of amazing human beings who had the male voice inside them that says, hey, you can just tough it out. Sometimes you can still be the president of your life, but on your cabinet, you need at least a couple of responsible people who have good advice and good options to offer. And then you still get to pick which option you want to do. You're not dictated to by somebody.
Sure. But
at least you got to have a good cabinet.
No, that's so true. You know, and it's really important. And also, you know, comfortably, you know, deciding, sit down, have the talk, who's going to do what tasks, and give each other grace for not having the energy if you can't do a task that day. You have such wonderful tips for that as well.
Yeah, I talk about, again, that's playfulness and collaboration. Again, instead of going to war over how we're going to do the dishes and how we're going to raise the kids and how we're going to do this, but just say, here's some things I love doing my way. Here's some things you love doing your way. Here's some things where we can actually be good teammates. And here's some things none of us wants to do. We better find somebody who can help us with that.
So
now you're teammates. Now you're like your executives running a really complicated company together.
Yes.
And you're utilizing your talent instead of saying you're a terrible person because you loaded the dishwasher wrong. I loaded that dishwasher. You did it wrong. That's not going to go too far.
No. This whole wrong, right thing, dualism is really painful and hurtful,
If you need the dishwasher to be a certain way, otherwise it ruins your whole day, then you should be the dishwasher captain.
That's
you should have like a really good tutorial on how other people can follow your things. And then if there's things where you're flexible, make sure your partner knows those are the flexible ones. These are the ones that have to be doing a certain way. Sometimes people know how to make the right sauce on the dinner. They don't want the teammate to mess it up. Mm-hmm. Some people, you know, need the vegetables cut a certain way. Great. Do that as collaboration. And then do some things where the two of you are just having fun. It's sexy to be in the kitchen doing fun stuff together, and something amazing and creative comes out of it, and it tastes good.
Yes. No kidding. Well said. I love that. Well, as always, we've run out of time too quickly. We always do when we talk. But thank you so much for being here. Dr. Leonard Felder, psychologist, best-selling author, speaker, everywhere. He's all over the internet. Google him, watch his interviews. You'll get a lot more information.
Thank you. And, you know, I don't have, like, big websites and all that stuff.
I noticed that.
If you want stuff about the book, at Amazon.com, BarnesandNoble.com.
Perfect.
You'll see lots of reviews and lots of descriptions of what are the topics that you can stop fighting about and be collaborators about.
Beautifully said, because I was just going to ask you, how can people find out more about you? And I did notice that you don't have a big website, but you're on all these other websites and interview venues and all the podcasts and all this other cool stuff too, getting awards and things like that. So
thank you
for being one of the most humble
This is fun. It's fun having conversations with you like this. This is fun.
I agree. It's always been like, oh boy, Dr. Felder's coming on. So thank you for being one of the most humble psychologists and best-selling authors and speakers I've ever met. I really appreciate your humility.
You can't be full of yourself if you're from Detroit. What can I say?
Well, I know a lot of therapists who would feel differently. But and you do too. Anyway, thank you so much. Have a beautiful week.
You will.
All right. Thank you. You too. Bye-bye for now. All right, everybody. Thanks for joining me here on the couch. And as I always say, do take care of yourself first. And that's not being narcissistic. It's just being good for others that way. Have a great one. Bye-bye now.
You're listening to On the Couch with Dr. Michelle, right here on LA Talk Radio.